You're listening to Paranormal Portal on Revolver Podcasts.
A really special show lined up for you guys tonight. We have a special guest joining us, and this is a gentleman who has a very, very unique experience, one that I'm absolutely floored by. I think it's just it's been an incredible journey, and in listening to him as he gave other interviews on both his own channel and on World Bigfoot Radio, the insight and knowledge is just incredible. And, I'm really looking forward to this, and I don't know what to say. It's just one of those one in a million, one in a billion kind of experiences. We're all curious about these beings called Bigfoot or Sasquatch or Skunk Apes or whatever you want to refer to them as. They are these elusive, incredibly intelligent creatures that leave footprints, and they knock on trees, and they howl in the night, and they, slap on people's houses, and they break stuff, and they're just always out of sight. They are the ninja of the forest.
Not definitely not.
Our guest tonight has an incredibly unique experience and insight, and ladies and gentlemen, please welcome to the show Mr. Kevin Lang. Welcome to our show, sir.
Thank you guys for having me. Glad to be here.
It's really our pleasure. And I can't tell you how excited I am to have this opportunity to talk with you about your experiences now. We've always been on the outside looking in, except for a very, very extraordinarily rare few people, handful of people, probably on the face of the world, that have experienced what you've experienced. And so it's just a real honor to have you here, and I'm really looking forward to our listeners getting a chance to hear, what you've got to say. So I'm just glad you're here, brother.
Well, thank you very much. Glad to be here.
All right. So in getting started, Kevin, how did this all start for you? Let's just start from the perspective of before you ever saw anything like a Bigfoot, what was your opinion of something like a Bigfoot?
That they don't exist. I was the same mindset of, everybody in the small town I grew up in, that there was one guy in the town that said that one of them had pushed a tree over on him and he was a town drunk, but he wasn't the town drunk. I found out later in life until after he said a Sasquatch pushed a tree over on him.
Right.
But it was just myth or fairy tale until what happened to me happened.
So, and that's really cool. And it's awesome that maybe it's not awesome. I just think it's just an incredible experience. But your first experience was what then, when you finally realized these things were really out there?
Well, I was hunting with, it was my first year hunting. I was with my dad and a couple of my brothers, which I didn't get along very good with. But
how old were you at this time?
14.
14. Okay.
And I'd been dropped off on a ridgeline, and ways down, further down the ridge, you know, there was a road that traveled across the top of the mountains there. And my dad dropped each one of us off 1/2 mile, 3/4 mile apart, and then was dropping down the road below to try to push stuff up to us. And I found a spot, nice spot to sit right up on the top of the ridge, about 35, 40 yards away from, you know, the dirt road where I got dropped off at. Found some rocks right up on top of there and sat down and just waited and listened and watched. And I was half asleep. It was first thing in the morning. The sun was just starting to come up. And right as the sun started, you know, everything was nice and bright and still kind of orange. Mm-hmm. I heard the loudest racket coming up from the other side of the draw that I was not the side that the road was on. The other side, I heard something just coming through the trees like a freight train. And that was pretty steep, rough terrain on that side. And it's like, you know, I had no idea what it was, but I thought I was going to get to see either a big buck or an elk or something, which is exactly what happened. A spiked bull popped over the top of the ridge, and it was weird. He made a beeline right towards me, and it, you know, kind of stunned me. I wasn't hunting for elk. I didn't have an elk permit, but that thing, it kind of angled over towards me, and when he run by me, I could have reached out and touched him. And just the stuff that you gather just in an instant, he was all lathered up and had been being run pretty hard, so something was chasing him down, and I thought probably another bull running him off, because right as he passed me and boogied on down the other side, you know, hit across the road and was down the other side of the mountain pretty quick, I heard something else coming up that draw too. And it's like, cool, I'm going to get to see a bigger one. And what, I definitely did see a bigger one, but it wasn't anything that I ever expected or had any idea existed. And that's when the first time I ever saw or realized that Sasquatch was real. Although I did not know what it was at the time. I was a kid.
Sure.
I had heard Sasquatch. I didn't know what that meant, you know, talking about the guy in town. But all I thought was monster. And you've been told your entire life that monsters are not real, but what in the hell was that? And it stopped right there, right before it got up to the peak of the ridge. I'd say I never saw it from the knees down. And here's this thing that is the biggest. You know, it was terrifying to me, especially being so young. It was the biggest thing on two legs I had ever seen. And it was carrying a massive rock in its right hand. Oh. It's like, and the stuff that's going through your mind at that moment is just terrifying. It's like, holy crap, what is that? You know, the whole time it's like, what is that? What is that?
Right.
It's a monster. And it stopped right before it got up to the top, and it looked at me and gave me a quick once over, you know, head to toe, looked at my rifle that was laying in the crook of my left arm, and then just stared at me. And it's like,
oh, man.
Holy crap. And the thing that that always gets me when I look back at it is the thing that was the most gripping about it was the fact that I saw intelligence in its eyes, and I saw nothing that told me animal other than covered with hair. But it wasn't, you know, I've seen a black bear. I've seen several black bear. I've seen a mountain lion. I've seen a brown bear. I've seen all sorts of predators, bobcats. And this had the look of a predator, but intelligent, if that makes sense.
Sure.
And it was calculating, you know, it sized me up in that second or two that it did the once over. And then It's still just frightening thinking back on it, but it just kind of rolled its hand off. You know, it lifted its right arm up that had the rock in it and kind of rolled the rock right out its fingertips. And that rock flew across the ravine and hit some rocks on the other side and shattered. It's like he didn't even throw that. He just kind of flicked his wrist and it shot out of his hand like a bullet.
Oh.
And that rock was, he was palming it like a basketball player with a basketball, that you have no idea the massive size of this rock was probably at least 100 pounds or more.
Wow.
You know, and the size of my center body mass. But, you know, I don't remember. I said anything. If I did, it was probably just garbled, like, blah, blah, blah. Even though it tried to sound intelligent. I don't know if I did anything. If I did, I was thinking, you know, when he looked at my rifle and his gaze lingered on my rifle, well, this ain't for you. I don't know if I said that or I tried to say it. I can't remember. It's been many, many, many years ago, but it did something that I will never forget. And it's kind of terrifying, but he took in a deep breath and he kind of flexed his muscles kind of like a bodybuilder would and went, let out this extremely loud, huge roar that I interpreted it now, looking back on it, as you're a jerk. You just interrupted my breakfast. And it turned around and walked back down and I didn't see it anymore. And I wasn't about to go look over the edge and see what it was.
Yeah.
Was it a Sasquatch or a quote unquote Bigfoot? I couldn't tell you. I never saw its feet. I never saw it from its knees down. But right. Where I was sitting on the rock on top of the ridge, I still had to look up to meet his gaze.
Oh, wow.
So how tall do you think he was?
At least 12 feet.
God.
Wow.
Oh, that's a giant.
And a conservative estimate would be 1,800 to 2,000 pounds.
Oof.
And he was chasing down a young bull elk, carrying a massive rock in his hand.
Oh.
And for 6 or 8 months, I had no clue that that's what a Sasquatch was. No idea. Well, it was just a monster.
A monster. Wow.
That's amazing.
That, the size of that, as you describe it, that does make it a monster in my book. That's for sure.
Yeah.
That would be crazy. You know, I'm from the Pacific Northwest. I'm from the Olympic Peninsula and originally. And, you know, we had stories of Bigfoot. No, don't go up Beacon Hill, you know. This, that, and the other thing, because Bigfoot will get you and things like that. So I grew up, you know, in the Northwest in supposedly Sasquatch Central. And I got to tell you, you know, and you know, for all the time I've been curious about it, I have never even seen a footprint. So that's part of the reason I'm here on the show, is so I can live vicariously. but that is absolutely insane.
Yeah.
Yep. Well, I'll tell you, I had been in the forest more times than I can count before that. Not hunting, but goofing off, playing. And, you know, we went in the mountains all the time. We got wood. I never saw a footprint either. I never saw anything that made me think that they were real. But I was never looking either.
Right.
You know.
So there's a lot of people that say, I've never seen anything in the forest. Well, were you looking for anything in particular?
Or did you know what to look for? Because see, after I grew up in this forested area of Minnesota, and it wasn't like anything major or, you know, real feral, but I just saw it as a forest. And it wasn't until, you know, I had an experience where I had one growl behind me as a kid. I was about 14 or 15 years old as well. And I didn't know what the hell it was. And for years and years, I didn't know. But as, you know, as I grew older into my adult life, I started getting into Bigfoot. And then I started finding out things that people attribute to them. And then I looked up in that forest again, and there's things like that all over the place. But it was like I had passed all those things for years, not knowing what to look for, you know?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
And I think that's the key, is that people make those claims like, oh, I've been in the forest for years. Well, yeah, but have you ever seen, you know, a tree way up in another tree that doesn't make sense? Or have you ever seen teepee structures or, you know, weird breaks and you know, things like that? And once you know what you're looking for, all of a sudden the signs are everywhere.
Yes, they are. Mm. If you know what you're looking for.
Right. So,
and, now,
go ahead.
And I just wanted to say the first thing is your show is only the third time that I have ever told that story that I just did. I was on Sasquatch Chronicles years ago, and I told that very first encounter that I had, and I briefly mentioned Glagg, but I didn't say his name. I give my entire Glagg story to Duke, and Duke is the one that encouraged me to come in on here and do other interviews. But I just, there's people out there, you know how this topic in this genre is so backstabbing and you know, they're I don't like that aspect of it, but I think I have something that could benefit and help us understand these beings better. That's why I went on Duke's show, and that's why I'm here, because I have something that if it can help us understand and maybe one of these days have a good relationship with these beings, I think it's my obligation to tell it.
Excellent.
Well, it is really cool because, I mean, you're bringing to light a whole different side of this being than everybody knows. But, you know, it's funny when you were telling that story, as you were recounting that story, I was like, God, that's just like that one I heard on Bigfoot Chronicles or Sasquatch Chronicles. And so it was you. I heard you years back.
Yes.
Oh, that's awesome.
And you know, there's the people, there's always the people that just love making everybody else's life miserable. I try not to. I have the best moderators and the best admins on my channel and help me with my stuff that don't even let that get a foothold, because it's all about learning. When you come over to Glaggland on Facebook or listen to do my, I do a live chat every Sunday night and let anybody in the world ask me a question about anything that I've said on Duke's channel in the interviews or anything that I will say tonight. I give anybody in the world the opportunity to come and watch me, my face, unscripted, answer your questions live in front of God and everybody.
That's for you.
Oh. And so I just, you always have those people that have got to, I guess, the, for lack of a better term, is the trolls out there.
Right.
I don't like that aspect of the Bigfoot world, but
you know,
I hope that everything that I, you know, anything that I have that can help, that's why I'm doing this.
Absolutely. You know, we have a lot of, we've had a few guests that are considered controversial, but you know what? Honestly, the fact of the matter is they have information they need to share, you know, they feel they need to share, and they're always welcome, you know, because that's part of why we're here, is to get, you know, to get people out there, get the information, keep teaching and giving that point of view. Now, yeah, there's a lot of trolls out there that have trolled the pages and things like that. And Brent is really anti-troll when it comes to that kind of thing. You know, so don't worry about anything you say tonight. You know, whatever you say is what you say.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's an open forum here. And if somebody doesn't like it, well, you know, there's, you know, a million other YouTube channels they could be watching right now.
Yeah.
But, you know,
I appreciate that, guys.
Yeah, really, absolutely. Our listeners and our viewers are very open-minded, and they love to hear the different stories. Even if they seem, even if to them, the listener, they seem outrageous or outlandish, it's not the point. The point is somebody shared the information. So here we are, and it's your night, buddy.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Well, you take everything that I say, and you put it with this person, everything that they know and they say, and you put it with the other person without the backstabbing, without the infighting, without the, you know, name calling and whatever it is. You put all of that pool of information together, it gives us a lot better we're all trying to work. Well, at least I am trying to better understand these beings. They're not an animal to me. I know a little bit too much to ever consider them an animal. They're a type of people or a type of being. You know, animals don't have language. Animals don't have the emotions like we have. They're way too much like us to be an animal. But we're all working towards the same goal, I think. Mm-hmm. Please stop the fighting. Right. And if we all work together, maybe one day we can better understand them.
Yeah. Well, you know, and it's unfortunate that it's that way, but that's not the way it is on the portal, and we'll never advocate that kind of behavior. We always do our best to protect our guests as much as we can. So I'll be watching for that stuff as well. But so you had this one experience, and how much longer was it again until you had the most profound experience that I've ever heard of?
Holy cow, that was the next hunting season. But it began in the middle of the summer before that next hunting season, even though I didn't realize it back then, but I do now. But I was a bow hunter. You know, I hunt with a rifle and with a bow, but it was my first year that I had a really nice bow, and I was another year older, and, you know, different time, different era, different place, small town kid. I had a motorcycle, an old piece of crap. I had the money to buy a new, I saved up the money to buy a new bike, but my mom wouldn't let me get one. The only way I got a motorcycle was to get a 5 milk crates full of parts and a rolling chassis, because she never thought I'd get it running.
Right.
Oh.
But I had a milk crate on the back fender and a milk crate on the front, and I'd put some supplies, just go down to the lumber yard and get the coal wood, just the ends and pieces. And went up and found a good meadow that I thought, well, I could see signs that deer had been moving through it and bedding down in one corner of it. And I built a tree stand up on the top right-hand side of the meadow, and a tree stand down on the bottom left side of it, backing the trees of the ways about 35, 40 feet up in two big Douglas fir trees.
Wow.
Depending on the time of day that I was planning on hunting, and depended on which stand I would be in, if there's coming up or if there's going down. But that was late spring, early summer, and I got them done in a couple of weeks. It took a lot of trips on that old piece of crap Yamaha. I love that bike though.
Oh.
And when I took off down the street on it for the very first time, my mom was ticked because she didn't think I'd ever get it running. But I wanted to get them built and then leave them alone so my scent could get away from it for better chances in early archery. And I had two other stands that I built in different parts of the forest and the mountains around where I live. That was quite a few miles away, but still the same general area in the grand scheme of things. But it was several miles away from that meadow. And I got skunked in early archery.
Oh.
And I got skunked in deer season on rifle. So late archery, I was back up there, and that's when I finally used those stands. And the first night I was up there, the stands I'd made big enough to where I could actually sleep up there. It was a permanent stand that you didn't take down. It's something that you wasn't supposed to do, but it was a permanent fixture of the tree when I got done. And it had a little ledge on either side, about 3/4 of a foot to a foot high. And I always would put rope across that if I was laying down, so I wouldn't happen to roll out. But I killed a deer the first night that I was up there, right at dusk. And, you know, I had planned to be up there 3 days. Mm-hmm. And so here it was, the first night that I was there, I killed a deer. So I was like, woohoo, I get a goof off for the next couple of days. I gutted it, hung it in a tree on the other side of the meadow. I was on the top right-hand side of the meadow, by the way,
okay,
where so, I was staying. So,
Kevin, I'm gonna interrupt you right here because we're just about at the break, and I don't want you to get into a spot where it'd be really awkward to break it up. But ladies and gentlemen, we will be taking calls if you want to call in. But wait till the second hour, please. We got to have some time to talk and to hear what he's got to say. So we will definitely do that in the second hour of the show. But until then, we will be, let's see, what else? I wanted to make sure to mention that unfortunately the Paranormal Portal is only a 2-hour show, and I'm here to tell you that Kevin's story is incredibly complex and long. We obviously won't be able to get into a lot of it tonight, although I do hope to have him back over and over again as long as he's willing to come on. But if you want to hear the whole account of his retelling of experiences, please check out Brian Sullivan's World Bigfoot Radio channel on YouTube. He's got seven. How many videos is that, Kevin? Seven or eight?
I think it's either 10 or 11 total. I think it's 11 total. Nine and the interview, and there is a couple of roundtables that we did.
No, so
in an Apocrypha episode, stuff that I've missed where people wanted to hear about.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. We are into our second half hour here on the show, and already it's just flying by, but time bends strangely in the portal. So, you know, it's a good conversation when that happens. So Don and I are joined tonight by Mr. Kevin Lang, who also has his own YouTube channel, and that is Kevin Lang's Glagland on YouTube. And if you'd like to check out some of his live streams and discussions, you can certainly head over there. The links for all of this are in the YouTube description for this video, but those of you who are in here, please, subscribe if you would, that'd be so wonderful. And, like the video and, yeah, that'd be awesome. So, I know we got a full house here tonight, Kevin. So apparently a lot of people are excited you're here just like we are. So, welcome back.
Great. Well, thank you.
So you're up. Oh, go ahead. I'm sorry.
Yeah. I was just going to say, I'm on my phone, and there's a storm here, and I don't want to mess with it. So anybody that's in the YouTube, watching on YouTube, tell them I said hi. Well, tell everybody I said hi. I just can't see or correspond with anybody tonight because of the weather, and I just don't want to lose signal here on the interview.
Yeah, it would make for a really poor interview if that.
yes, it would.
So anyway, where we left it was, you had built the tree stand. It's opening day. You got a deer, and take it from there, sir.
All right. And I hung it, the deer that I got, I hung in a tree, probably 70, 80 yards away from the stand that I was staying up in. And, you know, hung it up pretty high to where if anything come underneath of it, it would not be able to get to it. And I climbed back up in the tree stand, and I had a 30 below bag, sleeping bag. And so I'd always take my pants off and my boots off and leave them in the bottom of the sleeping bag. And I was plenty warm. Mm-hmm. And I dozed off and fell asleep. And when I woke up, it was, I couldn't tell you what time it was. It was dark out, but there was a nice moon that night. And I heard something. It sounded like whimpering or whining, and then it sounded like somebody griping. And you know, I try to shake the sleep out of my head, and I look over, and there's somebody underneath my deer jumping up trying to grab a hold of it. And I thought, you have got to be kidding me. You know, when I was half asleep, I come down out of my tree stand in a hurry and run over at this person that was jumping up trying to grab a hold of the deer hanging there. Like, what do you think you're doing? Put on the brakes, and it's like, holy cow, this is a lot bigger than I thought it was from way up in the tree. and it's not the person. Mm. Oh, crap. I'm in a pair of wool boot socks, boxer short, and a t-shirt. And my bow and my pistol's back up in the tree.
Oh, no.
And I turn around and head back to the tree and start going up. And this thing takes off the other side of the meadow. And that's the only time I would ever say that I thought it was animal-like, because this thing dropped down to all fours and run kind of a sideways gait. I mean, just fast, too, away. But it kind of looked the same way a chimpanzee runs when they're on all four.
Right. Yeah.
But massive compared to a chimpanzee. I'd say probably 6 or 7 inches taller than me, but it easily doubled my weight at the time. And I was 200 to 230, somewhere in there at that age.
How tall?
Easily, I was 6 foot.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Excuse me.
Sorry. Between 14 and 15, that year was extremely painful when I grew almost a foot and 4 inches in 1 year and put on about 80 pounds, 89 pounds.
Wow.
Yeah, finally getting big enough to defend myself against my brothers. Yeah. I was forced to.
Oh.
But this thing is easily twice my weight. Wow. And, you know, it freaked me out. And I went back up in the tree, put my boots and my pants and my boots on and my coat and stayed there and just watched all night. And I kept thinking that I would see stuff. And like I said, there was a pretty bright moon that night, but I could never see, you know, anything like I saw when I came down out of the tree.
Mm.
But the next day I went, you know, when morning came and it was very light out, I climbed back down and lit a fire, was going to eat something. And I went over and looked underneath of it and saw, that's when it started putting everything together. Like, holy cow, this is that thing that I saw last year. It's just a smaller version of it.
Oh.
But okay. In the interim between the first one I saw and this one, I realized that what I had saw was a Sasquatch the very first time. And this was probably a young one.
Mm-hmm.
And just walking around and trying to see where all it had been, man, it had been all over around me, all around that meadow. And I didn't see any of that stuff before when I got there in the middle of the afternoon. The day before, mm-hmm. And I finally got down to where I'd killed the deer and where I'd drug it, you know, way off out of the way and gutted it. And something had eaten the gut pile, not just scavengers taking it off. There was footprints all around it, and they were about the size of my foot in my boot at the time, but it was a barefoot in the snow. And this thing had eaten, you know, almost every bit of the gut pile that I had left.
Wow.
Okay.
And so it's like, holy cow, I started feeling sorry for it because, oh man, of all the stuff, here's that nice deer hanging there. And all I left, it was, you know, I didn't leave the liver and the heart,
sure,
but just the gut pile. And he was so hungry that that's what he ate, is all of that. So I started feeling sorry for him. And all day long that day, you know, when I was cooking, I went over and I had the, you know, the little block and tackle that I'd hung up in the tree, how I hung my deer up, lowered it down, and I cut some chunks of meat off of there and was cooking them over the fire. And every once in a while, I'd hear whimpering from all around me. And it was constantly, always moving around, all around the meadow, no matter, you know, where I'd look. I couldn't see it, but I could hear it, and I knew it was there. And it was sad sounding. It, you know, I started feeling sorry for it because I thought, man, this thing's starving. Then I started thinking, if it's young, if that other one is an adult, this must be a young one. How young is it?
Mm-hmm.
And where's its mom and dad?
Right.
If he's hungry enough to eat the gut pile, where's its mom and dad? You know, why didn't he go out and get his, pick up his own rock and kill his own animal?
Right.
You know, all of that is going through my head this time. And so, being a kid, and that's where on the interviews with Duke, I said it was the perfect storm of, at that time, I needed him and he needed me. There's no other way to explain it. It's just because of how my brothers treated me, I was in the right frame of mind to feel sorry for him, and I'd never do to anybody what was being done to me. So I took and I cut, had my hatchet, and I cut a couple of ribs out of the deer that I'd killed the night before, and I cooked them over the fire, and then I went and placed them out close to where I'd gutted my deer, and I just left them there. And it wasn't until after dark that he came up and got those.
Wow.
And for the sake of time, if you want to hear exactly how all that happened, you can go listen on Duke's channel on World Bigfoot Radio. But over the next couple of days, I enticed him closer and closer to me using cooked deer ribs that I cooked over the fire. And at the end of, I actually stayed an extra day up there, kind of got in trouble for it, because I wasn't supposed to stay more than the 3 days that I'd planned. But at the end of that, by the last day, I'd actually made contact with him, physical contact.
Wow.
That's amazing. It
just kept enticing him closer and closer. Every time I'd put two ribs out for him, it'd be closer. And over the course of 2.5 days, I worked getting him in closer to where the last time that I made some for him, he was sitting right beside me on a log.
Wow, that had
right,
been
right by the fire.
Huh. Now I got to ask you this question, because of course this comes up a lot in Bigfoot stories and people that have had experience with them, is that now I think it's something they do when they're in great stress, but did he smell bad, or how did he smell?
Not that I can remember then. I never smelled that bad, skunky, you know, rotten garbage smell with Glag ever until one night. And that will have to be later on another episode. We won't be able to get anywhere close to that tonight. But I never, you know, when you have a dog that needs a bath, it just, not like rolling around in anything, but anybody that hasn't taken a bath in a while, you can smell that they need to take a bath. I never smelled that rotten, nasty, skunky smell. The rotten garbage or the skunk smell or anything like that. Never smelled that with Leg.
Well, that's good.
And that's what I interpreted his name to be. Whether that's correct or not, that's what, we'll get into that in a little bit. But
sure.
That at the end of that first couple of nights, that over that couple of nights and those couple of days, I got up to him, and the last, after he was sitting right by me waiting for the next couple of ribs to be handed over, I handed them right to him, sitting right next to me.
Wow. That's just such an amazing experience. That's like, you know, the kind of like Jane Goodall making contact with the chimpanzees. It's like, wow, you know, that's incredible.
You know, I had no idea that I was doing anything special. I was just... I felt sorry for this guy, even though he's twice my size, but he was hungry, and it was like a little kid. It's just a huge little kid, and it was cool. He was cute. He was so ugly. He was cute, you know, compared to our standards, but,
right.
You know, I grew to love him, but, you know, there was nothing about him other than when he ran away that very first night that I would say was animal. Nothing. You know, he just looked like a large, extremely large hair-covered person.
Right.
But at the end, after I handed him, and it wasn't a rib the time that he is sitting there waiting for it and looking anxious and looking at me and looking at the piece of meat on a stick over the fire and looking at me and looking at it and looking at me and looking at it. That after that, I held my hand out, just palm up, holding it, and he took it from it and touched my hand. And still a little emotional, but it wasn't too much longer after that that he latched on to me and gave me a big hug and wouldn't let me go and started crying.
Wow. Oh, what a heartbreak.
Just like you and I would cry if we, you know, in that situation, you know, you don't have your parents and you're starving to death and somebody comes along and helps you.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah, absolutely.
And that did, it broke my heart.
Yeah.
But
wow. That's absolutely incredible.
And man, he held on and just give me a hug, which, you know, he's not a small baby chimpanzee. Remember, he's twice my size, and it was, you know, a little intimidating, but he was crying just like a little kid would, just like you or I would in that situation. And it just broke my heart.
Oh, that's so sad.
I knew right then that I had to do anything that I could do to help him. And it was a whirlwind from that day forward for the next several years.
Wow.
So initially this happened, and you know, as a 14-year-old kid, well, you know, I would think, did you want to tell anybody else, or did you just know already that it was something you couldn't talk about?
Right.
I knew what the town did to the guy that said a Sasquatch pushed a tree over on him. They were merciless. I mean, behind his back, to his face and everything. And it's like, you know, I never said anything about the first one I saw to anybody. I kept that to myself, except I did talk to the town drunk.
Oh, okay.
And that's what helped me put two and two together in the course of that first year. And, you know, when I talked to him, I asked him, you know, you're the one that the Sasquatch pushed the tree over on, aren't you? And he said, just get out of here and leave me alone. And I said, please, I'd just like to talk to you. Just leave me alone. I said, I would like to know if what I saw is the same thing that pushed the tree over on me.
Oh.
And he changed his attitude, and he said, because was it the local greasy spoon? And sure. Well, you don't want to talk in here. You don't want people to see associated with me. And so we went off out back in the back parking lot, and we talked for 25, 30 minutes. And sure enough, exactly what I saw is exactly what pushed a tree over on him.
Wow. And when you say tree, what size of tree? Do you know how big it was that got pushed over?
I don't. I know he when he said the Sasquatch pushed a tree over on him, he went to the hospital all bloodied up. Huh. And when they asked him what happened, that's what he told them at the hospital.
That's
about all I know. And all I know is that he was camping and cutting wood, and you know, his camping, he had a truck and a trailer, he was by himself, and he was cutting firewood. Mm-hmm. And something didn't like him cutting down the trees, obviously, and pushed a tree over on him when he was in his tent. But he was able to get out from underneath of it, but he had some broken ribs and some damage from, you know, branches and stuff hitting him when it fell over. Luckily, he was in a deep enough depression where he was at that the tree, didn't crush him.
Right.
So I knew what counted did to him. So there is no way in hell I am going to talk to anybody else.
Right. So you said that you don't know why it happened. He did the for lack of other term, the town drunk didn't know why he did it. He pushed a tree over on him.
Yeah. What I know now, knowing what I know in the research that I've done and this studying that I did in the last 30 years is, he was inside their living room cutting down trees.
Oh.
And the Sasquatch that was there got ticked. That's what I think happened.
Right.
What are you doing cutting down my living room wall?
Yeah.
What are you doing rearranging my house?
That was my entertainment center.
Yeah, exactly.
That's where I watched all of you little folks.
Oh, that's funny.
Exactly. Yeah.
Well, I'm sure it was probably a good thing for that gentleman who had been mocked for so long to finally have a real conversation about it.
Yes, and then having somebody and somebody that wants his opinion and wants to know if what I saw was the same thing that pushed the tree over on him, it was a huge relief to him, I think, at least I hope, knowing that there's not the whole town and not everybody thinks he's crazy. And he's the one that told me, you don't ever say anything to anybody about what you saw.
And that's that sad that that's the state of affairs, though, for people that, you know, because, I mean, how alone could you feel?
Yeah, no doubt.
Have something so scary happen and not have anywhere to go with it for, you know, because you're just going to be crucified for it.
Ugh. Yes, exactly. And, you know, that was when Duke asked me to come on his show. That's exactly what I thought the general consensus was going to be, you know, to my story. But, you know, in the last 10 years, 10, 15 years, you notice that the general consensus has switched. Now there's more people that believe in Bigfoot and know that they are real as the people that don't think they're real anymore. And, you know, I've seen that shift. And that's one of the very few reasons why Duke was able to get me to come on the air. I told him when he asked me to do that, I said, no, never. But he's pretty persuasive. And you see, I wound up doing it.
Yeah. Well, I'm glad.
He convinced me that, you know, one of the things we talked about is what I talked about a little bit ago. You know, if there's something that I know that can possibly help us better understand these beings, then I have an obligation to tell it.
Sure.
And you know, it's and the thing to remember is that you're sharing this for the people that are going to grow and benefit from it, and not from the idiots that would, you know, try to belittle you or talk down to you or mock you. I mean, the people that will appreciate it and desire this kind of information, it's going to mean the world to.
Yes. And that's, I've got to say, I was geared up for the ridicule after going on Brian's show. I was totally ready for that. And then it just blew my mind that 99% of the feedback that I've got has been positive. There's always going to be the people that are so unhappy that they have to make everybody else unhappy also. But as a general rule, it's been an overwhelming positive response, and everybody, their support, and it's actually been amazing.
I'm glad.
I was totally geared up for it to go the total opposite direction, and it hasn't. It shocked me and it surprised me pleasantly that people are receptive of it. I think people are sick of the crap that goes on in the Bigfoot world.
Oh yeah.
And there's that they're ready for all of that, you know, to change, and hopefully it will.
Right.
Exactly.
You know, just to let you know, Kevin, we got a whole lot of people in the chat that are saying hi and they're here to support you. So just be aware. Apparently, we've got a lot of your followers in here, and they're in here, and they're giving their love to you.
All right. Tell them thank you. I'm sorry I can't be on the YouTube chat tonight, but tell them everybody thank you, and I said hi. Oh, God bless them all.
They're here.
Yep, you just did tell them. Now you had this first interaction over a period of several days. How long was the whole period that you were up, staying up in the mountains there?
I stayed for about 4.5 days.
Okay.
And that was about the end of the third day is when I made contact with him, physical contact, and then he gave me the hug and started crying, and he just held on to me. Oh man, really tight. But it was good. I mean, that's what I needed at that moment, because like I said in the interview and what I led to a little bit ago, is he needed me and I needed him at that particular moment in both of our lives. And that's why I think that me and Glad worked over the years, is because he was just my friend. He wasn't scary to me. He wasn't a Sasquatch. He was my best friend. He was my buddy.
That is so cool.
And it's just, you know, I never looked at him as anything else other than a buddy.
Mm-hmm. So how did you end up, I mean, how did it go then when you did have to go back? Was that a real tough
moment? It wasn't as tough as you would think. I told him, oh crap. I started thinking, oh crap, I've got to go back to town.
Mm-hmm.
But how quickly he grasped concepts that are human, such as a day and time, is phenomenal. I took a stick and drew in the snow in the, or the, in the trees, in the pine needles, I swept them aside in the snow that Skip was on top of them. Out in the meadow, it was deeper, but took a stick and I drew a box and I put a circle with spikes around it and said sun and pointed to the sun because it was in the daytime. And then I drew another box with the moon and I told him, you know, when it's dark, you know, the moon up there. And he, I don't remember how he confirmed it, but I said, day and night, that's one day. I will be back in 5 days. So I drew a sun and a moon, a sun and a moon, a sun and a moon. I drew five of them and said, I will be back in 5 days.
That was cool.
And that's, and by the end of 2 or 3 hours, you know, he wanted to follow me home. And I told him, no, you can't. You can't. Please, right. You got to stay here. And I don't know why I was talking to him like you and I are talking, but I just did. Sure. But he stayed. You know, as far as I knew, knowing what I know now, over the years, he probably followed me back to town. I would, it would surprise me if he didn't. But when I told him I would be back up in 5 days to meet me here, right at the base of this tree. And when I came back in 5 days, guess where he was?
Waiting right there, huh?
Waiting for me right there.
Wow.
Did he just stand there for 5 days? I couldn't tell you. Yeah, I didn't think so, but five days later, and every time I told him I would be back at a certain time, he was waiting for me.
Nice.
Every single time.
That's really cool. I just got thought of Forrest Gump when he's waiting. You know, he brings his child to the school bus stop, and the bus drives away, and he just sits there because in his mind, I'm sure his mom was waiting there the whole day too, you know, for him to get home. Yep. So he had to do. So he's sitting there waiting for his kid to get done with school. So we're going to go to our next break, ladies and gentlemen.
If you like this episode of Paranormal Portal and you want to catch part two, we'll post that up next week. And thank you for listening to Paranormal Portal on Revolver Podcast Network.
Hi, this is Don with Paranormal Portal. Thank you for checking out our Paranormal Portal podcast. If you like what you heard, please subscribe to our YouTube channel. That's youtube.com/paranormalportal. And follow us on Facebook at facebook.com/paranormalportalradio.
Thank you. sports betting is sweeping across the country faster than the coronavirus, and Wagering Week is your antidote. I'm Tom Barton, and I'm a veteran sports analyst and respected sports handicapper who helped build ESPN's brand. I've been recognized and awarded by Pro Football Weekly and Gaming Today magazine as the honest handicapper. Let the other guys give you the same old boring sports talk with the same tired storylines. We'll give it to you straight here every Friday on Wagering Week. Don't gamble with other podcasts. Let Sports Garden Network's Wagering Week help your bottom line.